This is an ABC podcast.
So we've been building up to this for months and now it's happening. We're in the thick of an election campaign. We've got a date. We're going to the polls on Saturday, the 21st of May. Hey, it's Dave Marchese. This is Hack, and we're going to be here for you right through this election journey. We'll be out and about too across the country, which I'm really excited about. But don't worry, it won't be all politics on Hack. We'll keep you across everything else that's happening in the world. But for the next 6 weeks, there is going to be a lot of attention on two people in particular, the Prime Minister Scott Morrison and Opposition Leader Anthony Albanese, as they battle it out. So how are you feeling leading up to this election? Are you overhearing about it already, or are you really keen to get out there and vote? Well, we asked a few of you a bit earlier, and here's what you told us.
Do you know who the Prime Minister is at the moment?
Scott Morrison, eh?
Yes, go, mate.
What about the opposition leader?
Good question. Could not tell you.
What about the election campaign? Are you kind of like, it's just started, it's going to go for 6 weeks. Are you going to be keeping track of it, or we're not really that interested?
Probably not, no.
I've been seeing some stuff on social already. You know, so I think the hate is starting to come out, the smear campaigns.
I might do like a little research the night before, see who I actually want to vote for and then go for it.
Over the last few years, I think it's important that we are engaged. And I think there's a lot of resources out there for us to make sure that we know who we're voting for and why we're voting for them. So
for sure, it's pretty consistent for me year on year. I don't really think that the policies that they say that they'll implement actually give me much of a sway, because I don't really think they do much of what they're going to say.
And looking forward to the election?
Never. But I'm the same. I sort of do my research before going to the election and make sure that the person I vote for aligns with what I want to see come out at the moment and the direction I want to see Australia go in.
On Triple J.
Yeah, not everyone has the same thoughts on politics. Some people really into it, others most boring, painful topic imaginable. Wherever you sit, you're going to be hearing a lot more about it over the next 6 weeks. So get ready, more economy, more healthcare, more slogans. But if you're really not adjusted to campaign life just yet, it's all good, because Hack's political reporter Claudia Long is across everything, as always. And she's with me now from our Parliament House studio to break it down. G'day, Claudia.
Hello, Dave. Happy election to you.
Hey, I reckon you're pretty excited.
Oh, I'm so excited, mate. This is like my Olympics. You know, like, I've been preparing for this since, like, at least last year. I'm ready.
Yeah, she's been training, ready to go.
Oh, yes.
So it's finally happening. What's going on the campaign trail already? It's day one now. What have we had?
Yes, day one of a 6-week campaign in the lead up to May 21st. So we've already had a few gaffes on the campaign trail. Anthony Albanese not being able to list the cash rate and the unemployment rate. So he fumbled a bit there, and it's kind of ruined the first day of the campaign for him, I've got to say. So cash rate, if you haven't come across it before, it's something that has a significant impact on interest rates, you know, the unemployment rate too, both things that he should really know. And it's proved to be a bit of a vulnerability, not only because the government are now kind of, you know, pursuing him on this, but also the media. Because as you mentioned before, you know, the economy is a massive part of the election. So this is something people want to talk about, and it's left him a bit politically vulnerable today.
Yeah, well, let's have a little listen to that, because it was a bit awkward seeing it on TV. Here was Anthony Albanese being asked the questions by journos.
Do you know the official cash rate off the top of your head?
Oh, look, we can do the old Q&A stuff over 50
but
different...
Do you know it?
Over 50 different figures.
What's the national unemployment rate?
National unemployment rate at the moment is... I think it's 5.4... I'm not sure what it is.
Oh, yeah, it certainly was pretty awkward. And, you know, the Prime Minister earlier this year, remember, he was asked the price of bread, milk and petrol and couldn't name those. So now both leaders have copped it.
Exactly. It kind of, you know, they're struggling, I guess, with this issue of being seen as out of touch. But, you know, I think it's far too early to say potentially that this is an election losing moment, right? Like, there's been a bit of speculation around about that today, but, you know, this is a 6-week campaign. It's one gaffe. He's already apologised for it. He already apologised for it earlier today, in fact. And so it's far too early, I think, to say what kind of impact, if any, this is actually going to have on people's votes.
We've got some messages coming through about the election. Somebody says, already sick of the smear campaigning. Really wish the election process was more full of facts than schoolyard bully tactics from both sides. Somebody else says, whoever's putting on the sausage sizzle gets my vote. That was Lachlan there. So, Claudia, this campaign is going to be massive over the next, you know, few weeks. Why do the major parties sink so much time and money into this 6 weeks specifically? Obviously, it's leading up to it, but they really go to town.
Yeah, absolutely. This is like a huge undertaking. You know, we're talking about not only the two leaders of these parties flying all over the country. It's got, you know, they've got the media pack following them. Then they've got their own MPs and politicians, you know, out every day talking about policies. It's a huge undertaking. And part of the reason, Dave, is that a lot of what we're going to see happen is politicians visiting marginal seats. And what marginal seats are is where, you know, they're held by a very, very slim majority. You know, these are tight races where anyone could win, and that could really change, you know, who's in power, who's in government. And they're really where a lot of election results are decided. So what we're going to see in the 6-week campaign is seat by seat campaigning. And unfortunately, because they're all over the country, they're not nearby. So you have to fly to each one and go to each one and visit them multiple times because you're trying desperately to get people to vote for you so you can be in government. The other thing too is, you know, you can't just visit one or two states or rather three or four states where all the marginal seats are. You have to visit everyone because you can't, you know, let voters feel like they're left out and forgotten and left behind. And a big part of it too is, of course, us, the media, because a lot of the election campaign is about having media opportunities and having the media talk about you and what you're doing. And, you know, that could be for better or for worse, as I think Anthony Albanese learned today as well. And also, it's just tradition. This is just how it's done, I think, and that's really stuck around.
Reece says, can we just skip to the polls? The campaigns are a waste of time. It's not like they deliver on anything they promise anyway. That's somebody there. Somebody else says, I'm looking forward to the yellow barrage of ads, always hilarious until you meet one of the 3% who believes pigs can fly. What does all this mean, Claudia, for the minor parties and independents?
Well, they're usually running much more targeted and local campaigns. So you'll notice that other than the Greens, who are campaigning nationally, but in a very, I guess, different way to the two major parties, you know, it's not like this huge media circus. The otherwise minor parties and independents do tend to target like one specific area or a small group of similar areas. So I think a really good example of this is actually the independents who are running with the support of the Voices of group. So, you know, they're targeting affluent inner city areas, like they're held by the Liberals now. They're targeting the votes of a group who I guess are sometimes like colloquially referred to as tree Tories. So if you haven't heard that term before, it's basically someone who leans economically a bit more conservative, a bit more to the right, but they care about things like the environment and integrity and things like that, hence the term tree Tory. So you're going to see them running in, you know, Liberal strongholds like Josh Frydenberg's seat of Kooyong, former Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull's former seat of Wentworth. But, you know, just because the independents are running comparatively smaller campaigns, that doesn't mean it's easy going for them. You know, the major parties are really trying to fend off these contests. They're a bit worried about them. And, you know, some of these independent groups are also drawing a bit of criticism. So Climate 200, which is a campaign funding group, they've garnered a bit of criticism themselves over the weekend for lacking diversity from someone who tried to seek endorsement from them and also from one of their candidates' opponents, Dave Sharma, as well, who's the Liberal member for Wentworth. So the Climate 200 group actually support a number of independents, including Voices of, but also some others as well. So, for instance, Triple J's own former presenter, Alex Dyson, is supported by this group, and established independents like Tasmanian Andrew Wilkie as well. So, but they're drawn a bit of criticism for not having enough diversity, and that's definitely, I guess, a continuing conversation about all of the political parties, because when you look at Parliament, there's really not a lot of diversity in either of the chambers.
Yeah, that's for sure. Claudia, the politicians obviously out on the campaign trail, but there's still stuff happening in Canberra where there seems to be a bit of confusion over who's going to be in cabinet if the government's returned.
Yes. So Scott Morrison has actually said Alan Tudge is still technically a member of cabinet and free to return to his former role of education and youth minister whenever he likes, because it's technically not actually his former role yet. So you might remember that he stepped back from the front bench late last year when he was accused by a former staffer named Rochelle Miller, with whom he had a consensual affair a couple of years ago. She accused him of being emotionally and, in one instance, physically abusive. Now, it's important to note, too, that he strongly denies that. And after there was an investigation launched last year, led by a senior bureaucrat, into this situation, the investigation found that there was insufficient evidence that Alan Tudge had breached ministerial standards, but he decided not to return to the front bench, stepping back last year. And that's led to a bit of confusion and apparent backtracking on the issue of, you know, what's his position? And I think for the government, it presents a real problem for them, right? Because it reminds voters of a really major issue facing the coalition government around accountability and workplace culture. And there's also more news out of that today as well, because the ABC has confirmed that Ms. Miller has reached a settlement with the government, which will be more than $500,000. But the PM was asked about it today and he wouldn't comment or confirm the payment.
Oh, interesting, Claudia. I reckon we're going to be hearing a lot more about it. Hack political reporter Claudia Long, thank you so much for your time, and we'll be speaking to you a lot more often over the next 6 weeks.
See you, Dave.
See ya. And Hack has asked both the Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, and the opposition leader Anthony Albanese to come on and speak with us. So hopefully you're going to have the chance to hear from our leaders directly over the next few weeks. Let's get into the nuts and bolts of voting now, because I know a heap of you are probably thinking, yeah, it's 6 weeks away, I'll deal with it next month. But there's actually a bit of stuff you got to get across, like, are you enrolled? What happens if you get COVID just before the election and you can't go out to vote? Well, someone who can fill us in on that is Evan Eakin-Smith. He's from the Australian Electoral Commission and he's with us now. Hey, Evan, thanks for coming on Hack. Firstly, let's start with the basics. Who is eligible to vote in Australia?
All Australian citizens age 18 and over. It's really important that people enrol to vote. If you are over 18, if you just turned 18, well, there's 600,000 first-time voters already on the roll. People who've turned 18 since the previous federal election, come and join them. Make sure you get on the roll. Have your say this federal election.
So when we talk about enrolling, because a lot of young people are going to be hearing this, you've got to enrol, you've got to make sure your enrolment's up to date. If it is your first election, does it happen automatically? Do you have to go and do it yourself? What's the process?
We try and enrol people directly where we can, but it's not a catch-all. Ultimately, it's up to the individual, it's up to you, the voter, or the potential voter, to get enrolled. And young Australians particularly move around a little bit. You might be leaving home to go to your first job, to go to university, whatever the case might be. You need to make sure you enrol and you update. But it's pretty easy. aec.gov.au, you can do it on your phone, take about 5 minutes.
Right, okay, because there are some people who are saying, oh, I think it's been done for me already, but you're saying that's not always happening and you've got to check that before the election you are enrolled. What's the deadline to make sure that you're enrolled in time to vote?
You've got a week. The enrol closes at 8 p.m. on Monday the 18th of April. So if you don't meet that deadline, you might miss out on your say. So it's really important. But if you're sitting there, if you're listening to it, you might be on your drive home, whatever the case might be. When you get on the couch later on, just have a fiddle in the commercial break, if there's such a thing anymore these days, and you'll be able to get it done.
So that's if you're enrolling to vote, you've got a week to do it to make sure that you're on the roll, that you're eligible to do it. If you don't do it, what are the consequences?
Well, it might sound a little hokey, but the biggest consequence is you miss out on your say. Your vote is about who's going to represent your electoral division, your local area, in federal parliament, in the House of Representatives, and who's going to represent you as a senator as well. So, and that's multiple people. In states, we're electing 6 senators per state this election, 2 for each of the territories. It's really important. These people make important decisions that will actually affect your life moving forward for the next 3 years. So really, really important that you do it. Enrolment, compulsory. So is voting. If you don't show up and vote, you might get a fine as well. So save yourself the money and access your vote.
Right. Okay. Now, one of the big things that's different about this election that we didn't have to deal with before 3 years ago was COVID, obviously. There's still thousands of people getting COVID every day. What happens if it happens, you know, the day before the election or on the morning of the election, you test positive? What can you do if you can't leave your house?
Yeah, we're getting this question a little bit and completely understand it. So up until the Wednesday prior to polling day, people who can't come in person, and that includes people who tested positive to COVID or need to isolate, your option there for not coming in person is to apply for a postal vote. Those last 3 days, the Thursday, the Friday, and election day itself on the Saturday, we'll be providing a telephone voting solution. So we'll have a range of details about that on the website, where effectively you access your vote via phone. But it is only for a small number of people, only eligible if you're mandated to isolate and in those last 3 days of the voting period as well.
Yeah, because I understand, like, it chews up a lot of resources, I would imagine, to, you know, that process. And so it's not just something that people who can't be bothered to go to the polling booth should be doing.
And look, to be blunt, they'll regret it because the wait times might be a little bit longer than the wait times in the queue at your local polling place. So we'd be encouraging everybody who can to get down to a polling place. We'll have lots of COVID safety measures in place at venues, more than, you know, your average trip to the shops. So get down to a polling place, cast your vote, hopefully get a democracy sausage or a cupcake on the way out, and that's a better experience for you.
Yeah, of course. Can I ask you, Evan, like, it probably seems a bit weird for some people why we still vote with, you know, at a polling booth on paper when we do everything else online and we're updating our details online. Why is it important that we do it on paper and we do it in this old-fashioned way?
Yeah, it would seem funny to some people who don't live and breathe elections like I do. But ultimately, we'll do whatever Parliament decides, and they write legislation that says it must be hard copy. If they rewrite that in the future, say it's electronic, well, so be it. Us as an agency will follow that through and deliver it. And many people argue for electronic voting. They sit there and they talk about the easy access, the convenience, the speed, quicker results potentially. That all makes sense. You look at the other side of the argument, though. Transparency is also often brought up as a concern. Cybersecurity is often brought up as a concern. And those are really serious things to consider. Ultimately, it's not happening for 2022. And there hasn't been any real active conversations recently about it either. So it might be some ways away.
Well, look, we'll probably check in with you again, Evan, closer to the election, explain how the voting process works, what you can expect, how you do it all. But for now, thank you so much for coming on Hack and giving us an update.
Not a problem. Happy to come on again. Thanks.
Hack on Triple J.
Evan Eakin-Smith from the Australian Electoral Commission there, and so many thoughts are still coming through on the election and the campaign, including people calling up. I've got Sean on the line from Newcastle. Hey, Sean, what are your thoughts on the election campaign and what's underway?
Well, mate, g'day, Dave. How are you?
Yeah, good, mate.
Mate, for a long time now, I've just wanted to say quickly that most people who I've spoken to in the country have zero faith in politicians and the system. Like, we're forced to vote when we don't even trust the leaders that run the country, and we're fined for not voting, yet we're not allowed to vote on the important things in the country in terms of climate change or anything along those lines. So I'm just really disappointed with the entire system, and they just get away with whatever they want. Well, they can do whatever they want to do, and most of the time there's no repercussions for their actions.
Well, I reckon, Sean, there's probably a lot of people that have similar view to you. Thank you so much for calling in and sharing your thoughts. Another person says, as a trans person, elections just mean having to brace for the media and pollies using us as political pawns.
Hack! Someone asked me to describe the difference between Labor and Liberal, but to Gen Z. Labor is like op shop vintage, whereas Liberal is like name brands.
On Triple J.
Yeah, a fair bit's changed in the world since the last federal election back in 2019. Like, even the way you get news and information. TikTok, huge player now, and maybe you're already seeing a lot of political stuff on there already, like this.
Well, hang on.
Morrison is not interested in the rules-based order. It is his way or the highway. An autocrat, a bully who has no moral compass.
Yeah, but it's important to know who's making all this content that you're watching, right? And if they're linked to political parties, because there are rules around it. And experts are worried young voters could be misled by influencers who aren't fully transparent about this sort of stuff. Well, someone who is across it is Meg Nabali. You'll remember her as a member of our team here at Hack, but she's now working for the ABC's investigations team. Megna, good to have you back on Hack.
Hey, Dave, how are you?
Yeah, good. You've been working on this investigation into some popular union-linked TikTok accounts. Firstly, what kind of stuff were they producing?
Yeah, so look, a bunch of ABC reporters, including me, we've been looking into all the different ways that politicians and parties and political groups have started to campaign, right? And I've been focusing on TikTok specifically. And I've noticed this real uptick in anti-government and anti-Scott Morrison videos showing up on my For You page. So it's stuff like, you know, you would have seen it. It's stuff like the reasons you should vote out Scott Morrison, or old clips of Anthony Albanese playing a DJ set, or like a supercut of politicians' gaffes. You know, Albanese sort of not knowing the cash rates already made it to TikTok. These topics are usually like climate change and workers' rights and housing affordability and gender equality, all these, you know, issues young Aussies are grappling with every day. But our investigation found that a lot of these clips were getting huge traction, and I mean like millions of likes and views, and they were being posted on TikTok by accounts backed by unions. And these are pretty prominent unions like the ACTU, the United Workers Union, and the Victorian Trades Hall Council. And look, I get it. It's a free country and you can say whatever you want. But there are pretty strict rules around being clear about who that messaging is coming from. And these unions weren't totally transparent about that.
So what are the rules around this and disclosing like political affiliations?
Yeah, look, I'd love to give you a straight answer to this, but it's like all things politics, this is a bit of a grey area. We've all seen and heard those messages at the end of political ads, right? The ones that are like authorised by the Australian government, Canberra.
Yeah, the really
and
quick
that's what
ones.
You call the real quick ones. Yeah, you always skip over them. But it's become a real issue on TikTok. You know, that's what's called an authorisation. And the Australian Electoral Commission, or the AEC, it doesn't require that all unions put authorisations on their political videos. But all material that's, you know, quotes, with the dominant purpose of influencing the way electors vote is required to have one. So what we found was these three TikTok accounts that were connected to these unions either didn't have an authorization in their bio at all, or they had like an abbreviated one. And what we also found was, you know, these unions, they were putting clear authorizations on all their other social media, like Facebook and Instagram and their website and everything. But until we'd hit them up with questions, you know, asking them where their ones were on TikTok, they didn't add any of those. And the problem with that is, you know, you say you're scrolling your For You page and you come across these, you know, videos of these issues that you care about, and they look like really organic videos, kind of like young people expressing their opinions. But it kind of means something else, right? When you put an authorization at the end that says, hey, this is coming from, you know, a organization that has political links, then it kind of means something different, right?
Yeah, for sure. And like TikTok's got its own rules in place, and you were speaking to some influencers about them making political content. Did they know that what they were doing were like potentially against TikTok's guidelines?
Yeah, again, it's a super unclear area. And like, look, what we do know is back in 2019, TikTok kind of came out and made this big statement and said, look, we're not like Twitter. We don't see ourselves as like the go-to place for breaking news and politics. You know, that's sort of despite the fact that, you know, there's, you know, 440 million views on hashtags like AusPoll and Australian elections. Keeping that to the side for a second, you know, it's kind of gone back for putting political content up. So that's the rules around its creators. You know, it even gave political parties kind of a warning at the end of last year saying you cannot pay influencers to make content because, you know, these reports came out that a US-based marketing agency had offered $300 you know, to influencers to make and post videos about Scott Morrison, you know, anti-Scott Morrison content. But, you know, we spoke to an influencer, his name's Callum Newton. You would have seen his videos. He goes viral for these music remixes of politicians and press conferences. He did that, you know, hectic Jackie Lambie remix as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, he kind of said, look, I didn't know, you know, he was getting paid by the unions and he had posted videos to his personal page and he wasn't allowed to do that. So he had to take them all down. But his videos on the union page, Gen United, they're still up. So the rules aren't completely clear about what it is for organisations and for individuals, but TikTok's broad policy is, hey, you can't get paid for political content.
Oh, it's really interesting. ABC Investigations reporter Meg Nabali, thank you very much for filling us in.
Thanks, Dave.
And you can catch the full story on ABC Online. That story is up there now. You can read all about it. And remember, on TikTok, you can follow us at Triple J Radio. The Hack team's going to have a whole bunch of stuff on there during the election, explaining things, breaking down political news. You can also see some exclusive behind-the-scenes Dave Marchese content as well.
Hack. Melbourne man Sean Resnick has become the first single man to become a father through local surrogacy in Victoria.
On Triple J.
A lot of people know they want to be a parent, and maybe you're one of them. Being a mum or dad is just something that seems like it'll happen one day, but life doesn't always turn out the way you pictured it. And that's what happened to Sean Resnick. He realised one day he still wanted to be a dad, even though he didn't have a partner. So Sean decided to use a surrogate, a woman who carries and gives birth to a child for another person. And last month, his son Eli was born, and it's huge because Eli is the first biological child born to a single man in Victoria. There's only been one other single man that's done this before in Australia, and that's because the rules around it are so strict. Now, I've got Sean on the line with me now. Sean, welcome to Hack.
Hey, Davey, I'm good. Hey, how are you?
Yeah, well, thank you, mate. Like, congratulations first. I hope, like, baby Eli's going well and you're, like, fitting into fatherhood and all the rest of it. Why did you decide that you wanted to be a dad and do it alone?
Do you know what, Dave? I've always had a real want to be a family man. Even though, like, when I came out of the closet at 24 years of age, I always used to think, how am I going to be a dad one day? And in my 30s, it became more apparent that, you know, guys can do surrogacy and there's obviously fostering and adoption. But I always wanted to have a biological child of my own. And as I reached my 40s and hadn't met a partner who actually wanted to have kids, I thought, you know what, I'm just going to go this alone. But I had no idea how bloody long it takes to do. I mean, this is a 3.5 year journey. So, you know, you've really got to want to have a family or have a kid to go through as big as an arduous task as, you know, 3.5 years.
Yeah, I can imagine. It sounds like such a process. Is it a really formal arrangement that you have to make with the surrogate? Like, how does that work?
Yeah, it really is. I mean, look, in Australia, it's all altruistic, so no one's getting paid. Surrogacy over here only allows you to pay for medical expenses, pregnancy-related costs, out-of-pocket sort of, you know, expenses. And so you have to become friends with someone, essentially. If it's not a family member who's going to help you out, it has to, or a close family friend, it has to be someone who you create a connection with. And in time, once you get to know each other enough and you're happy to proceed, that's when you have to, you know, have legal agreements drawn up. You have to go through counseling, psychological evaluations. There's all the tests that the surrogate has to go through to make sure that she can actually carry for you and that she's psychologically and physiologically, you know, appropriate to do this with. And they test you out. Like, I had all these different evaluations done on myself to make sure that I had the, you know, the emotional fortitude to go on a process like this.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds so intense, that whole process. We've got about 30 seconds left, Sean.
Yeah.
Do you think we need to make it easier for single people to have a family?
Dave, I think we have to make it way easier. Firstly, legislation needs to change. Every single state has different sets of rules and regulations. Each IVF clinic has their own set of rules as well. And if you're doing it by yourself and you're not in a relationship, you know, you don't have anyone to fall back on, you know, for emotional support unless you've got close friends and family. So I think, why are we making it harder when we can certainly make it easier for the singles, you know, to do it? By the way, I am in a relationship now. I just recently partnered. Thank God, because I can tell you now, it is such hard work to raise a baby. So just in the nick of time.
Hey, well, congratulations both on your new relationship and for baby Eli. Is baby Eli doing well?
He is so good. He's a guzzler. He loves his milk. He has a massive scream on him. He keeps us up at night, but he is beautiful.
So
such a cool
good.
Kid.
Sean Resnick, thank you so much for joining us on Hack.
Hack on Triple J.
Sean Resnick there with his story, and that's all we've got time for on the Hack podcast for now. I'll catch you next time.